Support for this public radio podcast is provided by Cleveland Clinic, expanding globally and committed every day to providing innovative treatments and hope to patients worldwide. Online at clevelandclinic.org. And by Constellation Energy, a global provider of fuels, power, and energy services, committed to environmentally sound, energy-efficient, and sustainable energy solutions. Constellation Energy, the way energy works.
Getting back into mortgages.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. You'd think the people who once ran Countrywide would want to stay away as far as possible from the mortgage market. But that's not the case. Today, Countrywide's former president and some of his colleagues will launch a new venture called PennyMac. The Wall Street Journal says PennyMac will try to raise $2 billion to buy up bad mortgages. They'll work with borrowers to restructure those loans. Then PennyMac will resell them for a profit. The company plans to buy whole loans rather than chopped up mortgage securities. The European stock markets are closed once again today, but there was some trading in Asia. Overall, the Asian markets gained about 1%, although Japan's Nikkei closed flat. Wall Street gets back to work shortly with the Dow at 12,361. Oil's trading at 101 a barrel this morning. The dollar gained value against most other currencies. The U.S. government spends at least $350 billion a year on contracts. A lot of that money is spent overseas, and it can be hard to keep track of. That's why some House Democrats don't like the Bush administration's latest approach to contracts. Jeremy Hobson explains.
Members of Congress are focusing on a loophole in a proposed new rule for government contractors working abroad. For them, reporting fraud would be voluntary, while it would be mandatory for contractors here in the U.S. The question is, did contractors ask the administration for a favor? Congressman Peter Welch co-signed a letter demanding the administration turn over relevant documents.
I don't think you could ask any average citizen whether there should be a distinction made where we say it's okay to rip off taxpayers when we're spending money in Iraq or Afghanistan, but not if we're spending it in Mississippi or Vermont. It makes absolutely no sense.
It's not a loophole that says that you can commit fraud overseas.
That's the other side from Alan Shavatkin. His organization, the Professional Services Council, represents about 300 government contractors. He says voluntary reporting is sufficient. And if contractors allow fraud, the government can respond by denying them future contracts. In Washington, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
This is the Morning Report for Monday, March 24th on Marketplace.org. Today you can get plenty of deals on leftover Easter candy. But will retailers see a spring in their sales? Daniel Carson has more.
Stores want to get rid of what's left of the 90 million chocolate bunnies and 16 billion jelly beans that showed up on shelves this season.
People can definitely expect sales on merchandise like candy and some flowers.
That's Ellen Davis with the National Retail Federation. She says while Easter goodies are being marked down, there won't be many sale signs for spring-inspired clothes.
Spring hasn't even really started throughout the country, so some retailers think they can probably continue to sell some of these items at full price.
Consumers spent about $14.5 billion on Easter, about the same as last year. Davis says retailers should see consumer spending go up for a couple of weeks. But whether the momentum continues goes back to the weather.
In many parts of the country, it's still very cool outside, and parents aren't thinking about buying summer clothes for their kids. You're not going to see the same type of traffic you might have if Easter happened in the middle of April.
In Washington, I'm Danielle Carson for Marketplace.
Over the weekend, there were dozens of events commemorating World Water Day. The United Nations is trying to draw attention to the billion people who lack access to clean drinking water. One group hopes to find an entrepreneurial solution to this problem. Sam Eaton reports from the Marketplace Sustainability Desk.
The United Nations says solving the global water crisis would cost an estimated $4 billion a year. But a global competition ending this Wednesday aims at doing the same thing for a fraction of the price. It's called the Global Water Challenge. Executive Director Paul Faith says the traditional top-down approach has failed, and it's time to enlist the help of local innovators.
So what we're trying to do is help communities help themselves. And finding in social entrepreneurs some great ideas for doing things that no one has ever thought of before.
So far, the online competition has generated more than 100 proposals from all over the world. Everything from clay water filters with antibacterial silver linings to locally owned public bathrooms and slums. The competition aims to connect global investors with local entrepreneurs to foster both clean water and economic activity. In Los Angeles, I'm Sam Eaton for Marketplace.
One technology that hasn't changed too much over the years, parking meters. But as often as those things break or rip you off, it seems like something new is needed. And here it is. Rachel Dornhelm explains.
In Walnut Creek, California, the old lollipop head parking meters have been replaced by a new multi-space pay system. For five spaces, there's just one machine. The metal kiosks squat by the curb, looking like petite ATMs. Opinions about them are mixed, but everyone has one.
They're annoying. I'd rather pay and just twist it.
I think it's perfect. It's great. It's nice that you can use a credit card instead of, you know, you have to have coins. If you don't have coins, then you're kind of in trouble.
City officials crow that the machines are solar powered and that they'll soon accept payment via cell phone. Matt Huffaker works as a business manager for the city. He says the machines make parking enforcement simpler.
Our system allows our police department to have mobile handhelds, which show what spaces have been paid for and which ones have not.
At $9,000 a pop, the new pay stations aren't cheap to install. But parking consultant Richard Raskin says they can boost a city's parking revenue by as much as 40%.
Parking is one of the biggest cash industries in the country. The two of the other big ones, and this will just put it in perspective, are casinos and illicit drugs.
Raskin says he's done studies for cities that suggest up to half of their parking quarters are, shall we say, falling through the grate. The new machines could cut that loss and pick up some extra revenue.
When you pay with a credit card or a debit card, you end up saying, I'll pay for a little bit extra. You drive away with unused parking left on your meter, and these meters now reset. They don't allow the next person pulling in to take advantage of that, and that brings in extra revenue as well.
Raskin says yet more savings come on vandalism repairs.
When you have 6 to 10 single-space meters, you have the potential of having 6 to 10 problems on that particular block. When you have one multi-space meter, you have the potential of having one problem.
Like many cities, Walnut Creek officials want to increase street parking turnover, so they're raising parking rates. That'll help pay for the new machines, but it could make them a harder sell to citizens. At the other end of California, the city of Newport Beach found the new meters impossible to sell. After flirting with pay stations, the city bowed to public pressure and brought back the old single head kind. I'm Rachel Dornhelm for Marketplace.
There's a report this morning that J.P. Morgan might increase its offer for Bear Stearns, perhaps from $2 a share to $10. The New York Times says J.P. Morgan wants the support of Bear Stearns shareholders and employees. But the Federal Reserve, which is backing this deal, could be resistant to a price increase. The Fed doesn't want people seeing this as an investor bailout.
And now it's time for the Sloan Sessions.
Alan Sloan from Fortune Magazine, how do you see the Bear Stearns deal?
I am not pleased, okay, to see all these mid-level people at the Bear getting killed. Just like I'm not pleased to see a lot of these small mortgage companies, many of which have done nothing wrong, and they just get wiped out and their employees end up with nothing. And the people who enabled a lot of this, who were the high-priced people on Wall Street, They may take a financial hit, but believe me, they're not going to starve. This is a result of the way the Fed and the Treasury have chosen to operate, and maybe they have to operate that way. Because if you can show me an alternate way to save the financial system from massive defaults around the world. I'd love to know what it is.
Do you think the situation would be different if this were another industry, say the auto industry, and the government was stepping in? Do you think the attitude toward this would be different?
Well, the government a billion years ago stepped in and, and saved Chrysler.
Right.
And I thought that was an intelligent thing to do. And the government ended up making money in the deal because it guaranteed some loans. Chrysler prospered, at least for a while, paid back the loans, and the government made a few hundred million dollars. I don't think in this environment, if say, General Motors were collapsing or Ford, or I don't think the government would step in and help them. The thing with the financial system is it's so interrelated that people are afraid to let a real big institution fail because you run a risk of taking down the whole world's financial system.
How do you think that the Fed could exact a price in this situation so that it doesn't happen again?
By doing two things. One, enforcing some sort of penalty on the top people and really hitting them badly financially as a condition of the bailout, making them make serious personal sacrifices financially. And second, if we're going to put capital into this bank, which we're doing, I'd like to see a structure where we, the taxpayers, get a piece of the company so when it recovers, we get rewarded for the money that we've put in at a time when they really needed it.
All right, Alan Sloan from Fortune Magazine, thanks.
You're welcome.
And your thoughts are always welcome. Log on to our website, marketplace.org, to share them with us. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening, and enjoy your day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.